solutions anywhere, anytime. You can have the peace of mind knowing that you can create endless supply of...
Welcome to the InfoWars live postmortem coverage of the zombie election. It's November 7th, 2012. I'm David Knight. I'm going to be joined here tonight with Aaron Dykes, Melissa Melton, David Ortiz, Jakari Jackson, and Dan Bedondi. And we're going to be looking at a lot of aspects of this last election. One thing we're not going to be talking a lot about is Obama and Romney. We'll be talking about some other effects of the election because we know that if you're like us, you're pretty sick of hearing it. You're probably about ready to cry like the little girl in the viral video if you've seen that. One of the things that we've been following is initiatives. And there's several initiatives. We've got an article on Infowars.com that is looking at 10 states that are voting on nullification measures this week. And this has some, there a lot of people on the InfoWars poll that we had said they were more interested in ballot initiatives than they were in the presidential election. And certainly these particular issues are something that are going to be very interesting in the months to come, because what they're doing is they're setting up power conflicts between the states and the federal government in certain areas. In one area, we've got Obamacare. There were five ballot initiatives in various states that had to do with limiting Obamacare. Now, in Florida, they had two initiatives. One would limit Obamacare, the individual mandate, as well as public funding of abortion. Now, those both failed. But in Wyoming, Alabama, and Montana, ballot initiatives that would limit the individual mandate passed. And in Wyoming, they actually said that they actually are going to put it in the Constitution that they have a right to make their own health care decisions. Imagine that, that we have a right to make our own health care decisions. It's really kind of gotten to a bad state of affairs, hasn't it, when we have to assert our rights because we've taken the assumption that everything is prohibited unless expressly permitted by our federal government. But we've also had some other initiatives on medical marijuana. And interesting, because there's several states, there's about 16 states that currently have medical marijuana available. The first one in Montana, they actually put some additional restrictions on medical marijuana, which is going to make it tighter. Arkansas failed to pass a medical marijuana initiative, But in Massachusetts, they passed one. And the real interesting thing was there's three states, Oregon, Colorado, and Washington, where they actually legalized marijuana. They went beyond just medical marijuana use to full legalization. Oregon did not pass it, but they do still have medical marijuana available in Oregon. But in Colorado and Washington, recreational use of marijuana has been passed. So that's going to be real interesting to see what happens when the federal government starts to come in and assert their DEA authority, which they don't really have constitutional authority to do that. And also in five Michigan cities, marijuana legalization or decriminalization went 5-for-5. In Detroit, Measure M removed criminal penalties for possession of less than an ounce. Same thing in Flint, decriminalized possession of less than an ounce. Both of those measures passed by about 60%. In Kalamazoo, they're going to allow three medical marijuana dispensaries. That got 64% of the vote. In Grand Rapids, they have an initiative that makes possession of marijuana a civil rather than a criminal offense. That got 59% of the vote. And in Ypsilanti, Michigan, they have a measure that says enforcement of marijuana laws will be the city's, quote, lowest law enforcement priority. Now, that's interesting because if you look at the, actually it was just on October the 29th, the FBI released some statistics that said that there's a marijuana arrest in this country once every 47 seconds. And half of all drug-related arrests involve marijuana, and 82% of all drug arrests were for small amounts. So that's going to have effect on everybody. You know, we all have to pay, whether we use marijuana or not, we all have to pay for the court system, the law enforcement system, and to lock people up. And we really have to think, is that really something that is a good use of our money in these tough financial times? But it's also a constitutional issue. You know, I care about this not because I have really a dog in the fight for marijuana. We don't have anybody that's sick in our family that needs it. We don't use it recreationally. But, you know, it's a constitutional issue. The 18th Amendment was required to prohibit alcohol. Where is the constitutional amendment to prohibit marijuana? Okay, it's not there. It's something that we all should be upset about. And, you know, I think as I look at the drug war, we've gone from a situation, the drug war was pretty much characterized by the confiscation of property without due process. That was kind of a hallmark of the war on drugs. Now we've gone to the war on terror. And what we're doing now is we're arresting people. We're taking people away without due process, not just their property. The related story, Prop 37, it doesn't really set up any conflict between the states and the federal government, but Prop 37 was something that we were all watching very carefully here at InfoWars because we care deeply about the quality of our food and the freedom to make informed choices. Prop 37 in California would have required labeling that would truthfully tell people what's in their food. If they have GMO in the food, it would be required to say that, just as they're required to tell us if they've got sugar or they've got salt or if they've got any other chemicals in it. And yet we're told that that did not pass in California, that people really don't care to know what's in their food. And yet, you know, perhaps that is true. Maybe it really wasn't a rigged election because in California they voted for both death and taxes and other propositions. They voted Prop 30. They voted to increase their tax rates on income and sales tax. And in Prop 34, they voted against banning the death penalty. So if they're for death and taxes, maybe they don't really want to know what's in their food. But we were all hoping that it would be a landmark decision, that once it was a law in California that they would have to truthfully label all the ingredients and the quality of the ingredients in their products, that would trickle down the rest of the country. But that was defeated. And at the last minute, it had a huge lead, but just before the election, the polls pulled even, which makes it very easy to rig an election. And one of the things we look at, last night we looked at opensecrets.org, which looks at the money trail on candidates. And we saw that in agribusiness, agribusiness didn't actually contribute that much in the aggregate to Obama and to Romney. Their combined contributions to both candidates were only about $8 million. And yet, in California, they spent over $45 million, and that's just six companies out of the agribusiness sector. six companies spent over $45 million to keep people from knowing what they're putting in your food. That's really a sad situation. But as Bev Harris pointed out earlier today in an interview with Alex Jones, we still don't necessarily know because there's 25% of the votes that haven't even been counted yet in California. And that's just part of the concern that we have with the election. You know, a lot of people are looking at, you know, did Obama win? Did Romney win? Which states did they win? I think the big story here is the actual voting process, the actual election fraud. We hear all these stories about voter ID. There's no identification in most locations of voters when they walk in. They just give a name and an address. In my former home state of North Carolina, some people that we knew, indirectly, the fellow came in to vote, and he was told that his deceased mother had just been in and voted. She had died 6 years earlier. There's 112-year-old voters who are voting by thousands in North Carolina because they're not purging the rolls. But the real thing that is the real story here are the voting machines. Even the mainstream media is covering all the long lines and broken machines and the vote flipping that is happening. With that, people vote for one candidate and they get another candidate. As we said last night, it's really kind of a metaphor for the elections themselves and for government itself. You know, it's very complicated. These voting machines are very complicated. They're very expensive. They give you the opposite of what you pick. And they're very easily corrupted. And that's, it's unfortunate that we can't go to a much simpler, more transparent system than these complicated hidden voting machines. I think that elections are probably the least effective way for us to control government at this point. You know, and the dishonest elections start way before we get to the voting booth. As we've all seen, especially with Ron Paul inside the GOP, we all saw the corruption that was happening during the primaries. But a lot of people don't see what happens to people who are outside of the parties. It's the ballot access laws. It's the debate access restrictions that are enacted that basically shut down debate. You know, if you have just a two-party system, you can get this Hegelian dialectic that's very easy to control, and you can also paint the other guy as a demon so that even if you don't like your own candidate of your party, if you're one of the two parties, you're afraid that the other guy is going to win. That dynamic would completely change if you had three or four candidates in there. You can't just paint the other guy as a bad guy. You actually have to talk somewhat about issues. And so it would be a great thing to reform the political system if we could open it up. But, you know, we might even say, even for people who think that we should only have two parties, at this point we might need to say, are these two parties the right two parties? The Green Party, for instance, could replace the Democrat Party, or the Libertarian Party replace the GOP. But that's just simply not going to happen because of the corruption and the power that's in these two systems. In a related article to that, the Lou Rockwell blog had a writer, Ryan McMakin. This article is on InfoWars, and he talks about the GOP being in deep trouble and how good Ron Paul is looking after this election. And he writes, Romney lost today to a guy who is overseeing a horrible economy, prosecuting unpopular wars, and who can barely string five words together without a teleprompter. This is the best the Republican Party can do. Not only are the Republicans evil, they're evil and contemptible losers, which is far worse. And he thinks that the winner in yesterday's election really is the Ron Paul movement. He says the Ron Paul movement is the big winner here. The GOP told libertarians in the party to get lost, and the GOP paid for it. Interestingly, both Iowa and Nevada, where Ron Paul supporters gained control of the state party, both went to Obama after the Romney campaign actively fought to disenfranchise Ron Paul supporters. I guess the GOP got what it wanted. Well, if you remember, there was quite a bit of scandal in both Iowa and Nevada in terms of the way the votes were rigged and not counted properly. And in both of those areas, they put Ron Paul people in as chairman of the GOP in those states to kind of assuage people's anger. But in Nevada, they actually, after they put a Ron Paul person in as chairman of the party, they actually created a shadow party. And they defunded the regular GOP party and ran their own separate party, told people not to contribute to that. So all that kind of stuff kind of came back on him. But it's a really sad situation. And, I got a tweet from, a friend of my son who's about 20, 21 years old, and he said the Republican Party on a national level is dead unless something breathes new life into it. I doubt it will ever win a presidential election again. The American majority is now a center-left constituency that doesn't relate to their platform. Well, I agree with him that they basically have become dead at the national level, but I don't think it's a, you know, he's looking at this from the typical left-right paradigm. He's not looking at the broader paradigm. Let's say if you're familiar with the Nolan chart, you have like a two-dimensional space rather than just a single line of left and right. And actually, Reagan kind of referred to that when he said the choices before us were not left and right, but up and down, up towards freedom or down towards tyranny. And that's really what the Nolan chart reflects. And, you know, if you go back and you look at this election, Ron Paul was bringing in people from both the typical quote-unquote left and from the typical quote-unquote right. He was unifying people. And as he said, liberty brings people together. And on the issues that he was talking about, people were coming together, and they were getting past this left-right paradigm, the Democrat-Republican paradigm. But unfortunately, that movement was cut short, I think, by a lot of things that we all understand were dishonest in the primaries. And so it's not really any surprise for us to see that in the general election. Now, one last thing, the GOP lost seats even in the Senate. So that's going to be important, and that's going to have effect on how things play out with Supreme Court appointments as well as other people in the cabinet positions. And we've got Aaron Dykes, who's going to give us kind of an analysis of what people have been talking about in terms of Supreme Court picks and in terms of possible cabinet appointments and how things might change and what impact that might have on us. Aaron, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks, David. Are we ready to go on this camera? This is our first live test in two different studios. Very exciting. InfoWars nightly news. Now, Obama obviously has been reelected. The people who wanted less government, who wanted to change the establishment, have been heard, have been speaking out throughout the past several years. We're one of many people speaking for those groups, but we were not in the actual election. The choice was Obama. The choice was Romney. Obama was reelected. So what does it mean? We saw immediately the next day the stock market went down. It tanked. We saw, on the other hand, health insurance skyrocketed. The price of gold skyrocketed. The gun stocks skyrocketed. These are all significant factors in the direction of our country, as Obama has promised to be a bigger and badder collectivist governor over this country, trying to transform our country even more into a dependent state where the big federal family rules over your life. And to analyze this a little bit more, we'll go to Alex's discussion earlier, analyzing Obama's speech, his victory speech last night, and then I will add some to that. Do we have that now? Okay, let's go to that speech clip right now.
Start playing the Obama speech where he kind of attacks individuals here. Listen to this creepy speech. Here it is from last night.
I have never been more hopeful about America. And I ask you to sustain that hope.
Yeah, chumps.
I'm not talking about blind optimism.
No, just let me sucker you more for farm banks.
The enormity of the tasks ahead or the roadblocks that stand in our
way. It's an enormous task to gut this country and shut down the coal power plants.
I'm not talking about the wishful idealism that allows us to just sit on the sidelines.
Those idiots
or shirk from a fight
are never going to know why their power price is roughly double.
I always believe that hope is that stubborn thing inside us that
Be stubborn, be hopeful, I'll abuse the hell out of you.
That something better awaits us. So long as we have the courage to keep reaching, to keep working.
Mindlessly letting the globalists rob us, Keep believing government's your friend while it shuts everything down. 51% of your power comes from coal.
I believe we can build on the progress we've made.
Oh, yeah, you will.
Continue to fight for new jobs.
Carbon taxes that won't be on Mexico and India and China.
Security for the middle class.
Going to shut everything down, but then make you go get welfare from them.
I believe we can keep the promise of our founding. The idea that if you're willing to work hard, it doesn't matter who you are, or where you come from, or what you look like, or where you love. It doesn't matter whether you're black or white, or Hispanic, or Asian, or Native American.
He claims pro-America, but then ties it into race consciousness.
Poor, able, disabled, gay, or straight. You can make it here in America if you're willing to try.
But the idea is government's going to do that. Government's going to take your jobs away, but then it's going to give you the select insider jobs picking winners.
I believe we can seize this future together.
Seize the future.
Because we are not as divided as our politics suggests. We're not as cynical as the pundits believe. We are greater than the sum of our individual ambitions.
Did you hear that?
We remain more than a collection of red states and blue states. We are and forever will
hit pause.
Be
hit pause. Back it up. When we come back from break, I'm going to play just that end part there again. Did you hear that? We are not individuals. We are not individuals with our competitiveness. No, we are a greater collective. I mean, whoa, Borg, you will be assimilated. Danger, Will Robinson. I'm getting chills. Danger, danger. And you got those people in there. I mean, folks, they're announcing they're going to shut down 1,000-plus plants in the next 2 years. He's announced it. It's not the Republicans saying it now. They're going to shut your power down, folks. I mean,
are we talking about here? What has Alex pulled out of this speech? We're not individuals. We're part of this collectivist big government system. But it's not just socialism where Obama has weaned in people who are dependent for one reason or another. It's not just the USDA encouraging people to sign up for food stamps, including foreign Mexican nationals. It's not just getting more people on the welfare rolls and telling them that it will be government stepping in to change their lives. It's not just the divide that we do, in fact, see in the country between people who want to be generally left alone, who want to remain individuals, people who are still part of independent businesses and don't want to be part of a strictly federal government. We're talking about a larger centralized government here, whereas the founders envision a separation of powers, state power, federal power, balanced against each other with individual rights guaranteed and retained under the Bill of Rights. That is the dream of this country, and it's slipping away, not just because Barack Obama is some kind of socialist president, but because he's a collectivist. It's a 1-2 punch. First, you invite in hordes of the population to accept handouts, to be dependent on government. That's the socialism part of it. It could have been the fascist side of the Republican Party that we've seen under George W. Bush and the other spokespersons, but this time it's the Barack Obama, Bill Clinton side of things. But it's all managed up above that, whether fascist, whether socialist, or under some other name, by the bankers who, as Alex has pointed out, have taken over the economy. They've shipped out the manufacturing jobs, not overnight, not under Obama, not under any one president, but over 40 years in this country, intentionally deindustrializing all of the United States. If you go back to the middle of the century, places like Detroit were the shining example where all races, all people were generally employed. It was one of the highest employment rates we ever saw. They had good jobs in factories, making cars, other kinds of work, and that slipped away as they shipped it over to China. And President Obama's Jobs Council is headed by people like Jeff Immelt, CEO of GE, and others who are involved directly in shipping these jobs overseas. Romney's been part of the same game, so that part doesn't change. It's all run by these collectivist bankers, run through the derivative scams, and you name it. So you've got the socialist pressures eating away at the system, the legitimate raising of taxes under a fairly limited government compared with where we're headed, all whittled away, all ledgered away by these bankers on the global market. So we're captured because of that. And you've got the Reuters analysis, victory puts Obama in position to expand government's reach. And what we're seeing here is, sure, the Republicans held onto the House. The Democrats are picking up the Senate. You still have a little bit of the gridlock as designed by the founders. But all that is undermined by the way Obama has already been governing when he was still facing election, where he began using the agencies to implement the policies he would have liked to see. We saw this most notably with the EPA when they tried very hard to pass carbon taxes through Congress and failed. We saw the EPA began to go around regulating, shutting down coal plants, and they were just getting started. He did it in all other sectors as well. And we're going to see more and more of this now that Obama does not have to face reelection. He's already gotten the ball rolling with legislating by fiat from the executive branch and through the many bloated, well-funded agencies that run this country. Now, I want to get more into the coal plants because there are going to be new carbon taxes. Kurt Nemo's got the article. You were just seeing some of the graphic. Let's go back to that. If we could back up to the beginning of it. Obama floats carbon tax the day after election victory. And Kurt points out how less than 24 hours after winning the election, he's already indicating his plans to further impose carbon taxes. They are devastating to the economy. It's going to be a minimum of $1 trillion in direct costs, but the regulations, the impediment to business, the extra paperwork, the bureaucracy, all of this slows the economy, doesn't allow it to recover. It allows it to fall more into that captured mode as the globalists who literally set this policy from up above control the means of production more and more, whether it's under the socialist coloration and figureheads or under some other collectivist model. It's collectivist. This is the New World Order. This is how they're doing things. And Obama will be kind of a petty dictator advancing his part of the game. Later on, we'll probably see a Republican part of that as well. But you look more closely at the carbon taxes, and they are funded by people like the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, by HP, by Shell, by GE, the Energy Foundation, Alcoa, all of basically the polluters are running the climate and energy solutions, the Center for Climate and Energy Solutions that are imposing these carbon taxes. We got to ask, why are they running both sides of the game? Well, that's their Hegelian model. And then you see also involved in Obama's new proposed carbon taxes, which he will implement administratively through the executive branch, is HSBC. HSBC? Who? HSBC? Weren't they involved in, oh, that's right, money laundering? They're facing the biggest ever record fines for admitted money laundering. I know we have a graphic for that if we could pull it up. HSBC Holdings has, they're facing $1 billion in fines over admittedly laundering money for drug cartels, for terrorists, for rogue states. They testified in Congress. They explained away how they're planning to fix it in the future, and they may be heavily penalized. But HSBC, well, they're just another player in the game among many. We've seen Wachovia. We've seen Wells Fargo. All of them laundering money for the drug cartels. It all ties in with the larger policy, fast and furious, to demonize the Second Amendment, yet allowing the drug cartels to ship in the drugs, feed the black market that's run by the CIA. It's kind of a complicated system, but at the same time, it's just run through the banking ledgers. They bring in the money from the black market, circulate it back out to the phony Wall Street market through the derivatives, and they capture and hold the real industries of this country. And that is how they are going to crumble this economy and impose austerity upon us. And just one little taste of that is in an article I did today. It's really just kind of a blurb, but it's very telling. You see how ATM guilt is now beginning to appear. Your paper receipt is destroying the earth, they tell you. And this is the mega banks who want you to go cashless, who've tried to ban cash in Louisiana, in numerous states in Europe, and more trying to get you on these Google wallet systems, these purely electronic systems, if not credit cards. And now at ATM terminals, they're telling you, don't get a receipt. You can reduce your carbon footprint by 0.49 grams of carbon just by refusing the receipt. I took this picture at a terminal here in Texas, but they're all across the country now, and it's part of this new ironic push where you're supposed to believe you're helping to save the planet by feeding into the very banks who sell you the carbon credits, who profiteer off of them, who trade them on the derivatives market, and allow the industries they also own and control to continue polluting while you pay for it. And that's the kind of thing that's coming under these carbon taxes. They really want you to buy into the propaganda of it while they're really running the show. And just, you're captured on the cash machine. If you want to get cash, you got to pay the fee. That's not good enough. If you don't want to use cash, you're still paying credit card fees and you're on their grid system, and you basically more and more won't be able to get outside of it. You're going to be guilted furthermore with this economic, not only with the economic austerity that's coming in the crumbling markets, but with this environmental austerity. Even as you're doing less economically, you want to do even less because it's going to help save the earth. See how they kind of feed into seemingly opposing agendas, how they feed into each other. And that is not all. Obama had prepared a sneak November surprise, they were calling it, new coal plant shutdown regulations through the EPA. As I pointed out, the things they couldn't get through Congress, despite the gridlock that was in place, Obama will pursue, as I've said, through agencies his policies. He will use executive fiat, and here you have more and more bureaucrats than ever before working on these big standards that won't allow new coal plants. They're shutting down coal plants. They were caught in their campaign materials listing the energy vision for America and how coal doesn't even show up on the charts. Love or hate coal, that's what we've got. It's 50%+ of our electricity in this country. We have huge stores of it. There are ways to do it clean. Many of those factories are already clean. We need to embrace a clean coal, not reject it and feed into slander scandals for solar, where they're really just scheming the money behind the scenes, where we're overseas fighting for oil and geopolitical positions. None of this is sustainable. This is what's going to crumble America and put us in ruins and push towards this economic collapse, which the system wants because they can get more control out of that. Now, turning back to the election itself, we have a clip from Bev Harris from earlier who's explaining a lot of the voter fraud that she's found that they've looked into, and there's a lot of areas. Sure, it may not have been in the end a close election between Obama and Romney electoral college-wise, but there's plenty of other scheming going on in the election. Let's go to that now.
So the most amazing thing to me was Karl Rove, who, you know, I think we can all agree at least knows his numbers. He comes on Fox to issue a rebuttal to their numbers, and they turn to him and they say, well, now it's a science, and so that your numbers are just wrong. You know, listen, we have the networks all going to one operation, the National Election Pool, NEP, which gives them numbers, and this is without counting the votes, and then they just say this is the winner. And so in this odd interchange, you have Karl Rove on there saying, wait a minute, we've got a 500,000 votes that haven't even been counted yet, and many of those are in Romney's strongholds. How come you've called Ohio for Obama? And they said, it's a science. It's a science. You know, it's like, shut up. Don't talk about actually counting the votes, which I think was really emblematic of what we were seeing last night. We saw them, I watched them call Tennessee 11 minutes after the polls closed without a single vote counted and with no exit poll.
How did they do that? I mean, it's...
What is this? They're clairvoyant?
So they're just setting the precedent now to just, instead of having more transparency, just totally put things into la-la land where maybe they'll close the polls a day before the election now.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, you know, the places that they canceled the exit polls, they did it because pre-election polls, they said that they knew who was going to win from pre-election polls. They didn't even wait for exit polls. California, 25% of the votes aren't even counted yet, and they are, you know, there's very controversial proposition on there. They're, oh, yes, well, this is the one that won. I didn't even mail my ballot yesterday until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Washington State is all absentee. About 40% of the ballots weren't even in yet. And they're busily calling the election. They can't exit poll absentee, by
the way. So it's a total hoax. So, I mean, did Obama really get elected?
Oh, that's the thing. Nobody knows anything about elections nowadays. What we are doing is we're watching the TV networks announce to us who the winner is based on a single private organization called NEP. You know, they aren't even going so far as to look at the tapes that come out of the voting machines. They're just telling us before the voting machines even spit out their tapes, this is the winner.
Unbelievable. So again, Bev Harris, a documentary, Hacking Democracy, you know, caught him repeatedly, you know, criminally. She's telling you now it's just polls closed. They announced the winner with no ballots counted in Tennessee. They're just announcing in other places when, you know, more than half the stuff hasn't been counted. It has now gotten, then I think from what you're saying, the worst ever, just absolutely in everyone's face.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at this. In Florida, you know, it's just, and the anomalies are flooding in. In Florida, this happens every election. The power goes out midstream, and then all of a sudden the trend changes. You know, it's like they're counting votes after the
It's like in the Whodunit movie.
The power goes out. Come on.
It's like the Whodunit movie where the light goes off and somebody's got a steak knife in their neck.
And it's actually kind of a metaphor, isn't it? It's like the lights go off. Oh, here's the winner. You know, it's really, and then Pinellas County, which is over by Tampa, they basically, now, get this, Florida, they were calling Florida for Obama. It was separated by 40,000 votes. Pinellas County had just announced we've set aside 10,000 ballots that we won't count until tomorrow. Nobody just, you know, this is the stuff that's really going on. There were 400,000 uncounted provisional ballots in Arizona, and there were massive meltdowns in Pima County, which is Tucson, and Maricopa, which is Phoenix. So we are just now beginning to unravel what was really happening during this election. And when people say, well, do you really think that Obama won? I have to say, well, that is actually not the point, because we can't know who won because of the way the system is. But regardless of who benefited, is this the system we want?
And that is the real question. What is the system? Not necessarily who actually won the, quote, elections, the selection process, but how gamed is our system? Well, it's gamed every step of the way. Republicans and Democrats write the rules for elections internally. They write the rules for their own party. If you don't toe the party line, you're going to have a hard time advancing. You're going to have a hard time getting legislation passed. Third parties are completely written out of the books. You can theoretically run as a third party, but it's extremely difficult to get on the ballot, to get into the debates. But that's just the beginning. Then you've got the controlled media cycle that she's also talking about. You've got pundits from clearly biased media sources telling you who it's going to be, telling you how it is, telling you what choices are important. But these are limited choices. You've got, what, four or five major slanted media outlets, MSNBC if you lean left, Fox News if you lean right, the other channels a little bit in the middle. And it's just ridiculous. Then the actual voting process is so gamed, so unaccountable, we can never really know if we're even having real elections. And I would argue that we're not. All of this is a centralization of power. The founding fathers have to be rolling over in our graves. And again, either side of the collectivist model are just giving more power to FEMA, more power to Homeland Security, more power to the EPA to regulate our economy, putting in these carbon taxes that are understood by economists to be a total gridlock against recovery. They're going to just grind us down and make us so subservient on government. It's absurd. And we have seen a number of states fighting back against health care, one of the biggest new taxes the country has ever seen. But by and large, here's Obama, reelected for 4 years, able to push this stuff through. And yet there's a number of important changes that are going on inside his cabinet. He's got to kind of change those colorations out as well. He's got to filter in different corporate interests. And here we have one of the first major ones, Tiny Tim Geithner, who comes from the New York Federal Reserve, who's a complete bought and paid for stooge, and who is a minion of Larry Summers and Robert Rubin, who of course did away with Glass-Steagall and helped a lot of the derivative scandals to get going a decade and a half ago. He comes from that camp. He, of course, has been Treasury Secretary throughout the Obama administration. He's taken a lot of heat, though, because, of course, the economy has not recovered, and everyone kind of understands what a tool he is, so they're going to rotate him out. So the obvious thought would be, here's from Death and Taxes magazine, Obama's next Treasury Secretary shouldn't be a Wall Street stooge. Kind of sounds like common sense, but that's not even being considered. Here we have the list of who wants Geithner's job. It's Obama's short list for the next Treasury Secretary, and it's really just this insider club. I don't think any of these names are going to be household names for the people watching out there, but it's the kind of names that we need to begin to look up. We need to figure out who they're connected to. And the short answer, they're connected to the same old schemers on Wall Street, to the power structure, who again have bought out our economy and leveraged it on the global market and are using that tension to buy up assets, to buy up power control over this country. This election is about a big power shift. I think Mitt Romney represented that same power shift, but of course the rhetoric was different. So under Obama, on the other hand, we're going to see a naked power grab. We're going to see it for what it is. Now, who are they considering for Treasury? The first name is Jacob Lew. He's the current White House Chief of Staff. Obama has rotated four of them through now. He comes before that from the Office of Management and Budget. That's a very bland sounding office, not something people talk about and analyze all the time, but they're in the nitty gritty. They have important, very important purse string ties to policy. They really decide where a lot of stuff gets budgeted, and they have so much power over the other agencies who have, as we have discussed, are doing the real policy setting and legislating in this country. Congress, again, has been gridlocked. They've been reduced. They've been made to go along with the system that's put in place. They rarely question it, but real policies are being set inside the executive branch. Ever since the days of FDR, this has been ratcheting up. FDR, who said we want broad executive power, then during the Great Depression, now it's coming full circle, pushing us back into a depression. So that's Jacob Lew. Next on the list, Gary Gensler. Now, this is the kind of guy you've heard Gerald Celente railing about back in the John Corzine MF Global scandal. He was intimately connected to that, blamed for not doing enough. He, of course, is chairman of the U.S. Commodities Future Trading Commission, and he very happily, according to the articles on him, is presiding over more than $648 trillion of derivative swaps on the market. Those are outstanding swaps. Again, we're talking about a figure of $650 trillion with a T. Gary Gensler is over this kind of financial regulation, obviously a go-along, get-along type, outrageously in favor of the existing power structure, letting them loot and, again, leveraging the entire economy, entire manufacturing bases, entire corporations that employ so much of this country, all kinds of government offices, all these pension funds you've heard about, all this stuff is leveraged through this more than $648 trillion of admitted derivatives. The real figures are in the quadrillions, of course. So they're considering Gary Gensler for the Treasury Secretary. That would be outrageous, but really we've got a short list of purely outrageous people to begin with. Next is Larry Fink, F-I-N-K. He represents the assets at BlackRock. This is a big Bilderberg-related firm. They're directly part of Blackstone, set up by Peter Peterson and Schwartzman over there. And they, again, they manage these asset funds. They manage the pensions that all these state employees have their money tied up to and all these other systems. And he manages trillions and trillions of dollars of the economy. And I've got some articles here about how Larry Fink, when the economy went belly up, was really a key point man for the entire bailout. You've got people from Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, AIG, Bear Stearns, all these other firms, Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan Chase. They came to Larry Fink to see what they could see what could be done, make sure the arrangements for the bailout were coming to them. And he really monitors more than $12 trillion worldwide, again, for that system that controls our collectivist government. It's not for the people. And these are the people they're about to put in charge of the Treasury policies, who do nothing more than greenlight the Federal Reserve's stranglehold over this country, tied in with this larger Wall Street market. Very dangerous system. Larry Fink could not be a worse choice, but he, of course, is being heavily considered. Roger Altman is the founder and chairman of Evercore and a number of other high-level financial and asset-related funds, just like the others. He is an annual Bilderberg attendee. He was there in 2012. He's been there in other years as well. They at one time considered having him replace Larry Summers in some of the bailout-related let's put on a good face and pretend we're fixing the economy while we loot and steal and collect assets in the background. One of those divisions that Obama set up after the bailout. He wasn't put in then, but he's being considered as well for Treasury Secretary. Then you've got Erskine Bowles, definitely an insider, maybe kind of the more conservative choice among them. He's a former Clinton chief of staff. He's considered a moderate Democrat, so he may be more easy to get confirmed, you know, particularly with the Republicans and everything, but also a dangerous choice. So Treasury, Secretary of Treasury about to change faces, Geithner going to step down, but you're going to get someone inside the system in favor of more Federal Reserve printing, completely behind anything Bernanke may decide to do, and really running scrimmage for that derivatives asset grab scam. Such an important system. I'm not the best to break down the overall economic scheming going on, but if you've heard Gerald Celente, if you've heard Max Kaiser, Alex Jones, Bob Chapman when he was still alive, this has been a huge ongoing scam since that collapse in 2008, and they're still picking up the pieces. Now, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is also expecting to step down. She was basically given that position as kind of a concessionary thing when she didn't win the presidency but put up a good fight. And they said, well, we're going to go with the black man Obama. He's going to kind of revolutionize the voting bloc and give people this new energy for their head of state, let them buy into big government. So Hillary got the side job of Secretary of State, which was great. It gave her a lot of power to work with Al-Qaeda, to put them in these smaller countries, and to manage these proxy wars. Now, I guess she's going to go back to the private sector, I mean the black ops sector, along with her husband, and run some of those things. So they're going to put in a new face. Well, what kind of change are we going to see there? They're telling us we have two choices. John Kerry, that is the senator from Massachusetts, the cousin of Bush, the skull and bones member who was put up as a fall guy in 2004 so George W. Bush could be reelected with more power. Well, you know what's interesting? As they're considering him for Secretary of State, he's involved with CFR. He's involved in trilateral. He's been to Bilderberg. He doesn't go that often, but he was there this year in 2012. John Kerry was at Bilderberg. Did it have to do with him being tapped to be the next Secretary of State? Obviously, as a member of Skull and Bones, already intimately involved with foreign policy, he's on the important executive committees inside the Senate, and of course will play a similar game. They don't know if they're going to go with him. The other choice is Susan Rice, who's already been in as U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., very close to the Clinton factions as well as the Obama people, and she's very much part of the power structure too. She had a big role to play in the Libya war and the other little smaller wars, the Syria thing that's going on, and whether or not that erupts into a larger regional conflict. She's also one of these legacy kids because she's the daughter of a former governor of the Federal Reserve Board. Her father was only the second governor in all of history to be on the Federal Reserve and clearly part of the power structure. So that's some of the change we're going to see there. And it's just amazing who they pick. We can't get someone good into this cabinet, obviously. Now, this part shocked me. I didn't know about this until I read thoroughly through all these articles. Eric Holder may have to step down. He's taken a lot of heat for Fast and Furious. The Republican side of things, Daryl Issa, have held him accountable for clearly lying about what and when and who he knew about Fast and Furious. Huge scandal resulting in the death of Brian Terry and other government factions. Government caught red-handed giving guns to drug cartels. Again, as these larger banks launder their money and let them into the country, as the CIA factions work with them to spread the stuff on the black market. But nevertheless, Eric Holder may have to face accountability in the sense of stepping down from being attorney general. Very corrupt, very much part of those Clinton years, Waco, and all the other scandals. So who might replace Eric Holder? None other than Janet Napolitano, Dung Beetle Napolitano, who is head of Homeland Security. Can you believe it? Such an unconstitutional, obviously fraudulent agency, a power-grabbing, occupying force who got their power after 9/11 on the backs of the terrorism, using the sympathy of the country being hit to build up an occupying takeover force that now considers patriots to be potential domestic terrorists, considers Ron Paul and third-party supporters to be enemies of this country, and who have continuity of government plans to take everything over as soon as an economic crisis or any other disaster that's big enough comes into play. She may become attorney general. Oh, but that's not all. She's being considered for one of those Supreme Court nominee slots. They may put Janet Napolitano of Homeland Security in your Supreme Court, and she's only 54 years old, and she'll be there for life. And ironically, she used to be the lawyer for Anita Hill, the person who made the sexual allegations against Clarence Thomas, who is still in the Supreme Court. Wouldn't that be interesting? Anyway, just a look at some of the more on the surface, in-your-face changes to the Obama cabinet. Again, as I would argue, he's about to make a pure power grab. We know he has talked about reining in gun rights. We know he's talked about blanket amnesty, bringing more immigrants into this country to break it economically and in some senses culturally. He's promised so much to the dependent classes, and he's going for broke with these new carbon taxes and everything else. I'm just shocked. Are you still over there, David Knight? Because I got to talk about some of these issues with you. We've got to flesh out where we are having victories with states' rights. We've got to talk about how to get more of those victories, because the vision set up by the founders of this country, the limited, the beautiful Constitution, never perfect, but seeing how much tyrants get into power, seeing how much people fall into power just by being in positions, try to split that power, try to pit opposing groups against each other. But that's all been broken down over the years. And now we have basically a naked executive dictator, a Caesar, in power. And it could have been a Republican, but it happens to be Obama in his second term. I mean, what is your take on all the stuff I've been breaking down?
Well, you know, you look at this, what Bev Harris said in that clip she had, you know, talking about how they're picking and pre-announcing who the victors are. We saw this in the primaries, right? Remember at the Republican, even at the Republican convention, do you remember how Boehner was caught with the teleprompter? And he was reading off the voice vote result off of a teleprompter. They had scripted the voice vote. They had already decided who was going to win the voice vote when they changed the rules. And basically that was about,
I don't mean to interrupt, but there's our next Supreme Court justice, maybe, the top lawyer in the entire country, maybe the attorney general.
Yeah, there she goes.
that was Dung Beetle Napolitano. I mean, we need to kind of pay some reverence for a minute. I mean, she's powerful.
That's right.
She doesn't be elected. She doesn't even have to go through the fraudulent voter machines. That's only if she's running for governor in Arizona. But once she gets into the real power agencies, Homeland Security, Supreme Court, there's no elections for that. You don't have to have voter fraud. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's hard to imagine somebody that has more contempt for civil liberties than her. I mean, it's just it's amazing to think that somebody like that could be in the Supreme
Court.
It's
people who will do anything for power, David.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes them so dangerous. It's not that... You know, her ideologies may have originally started, if she has true ideologies, with something good she wanted to accomplish, maybe. But she's shown she'll do anything for power. Same with all these other minions. It's how they got to the top.
These scum
rise to the top, and there's no accountability.
You look at these things, I mean, we hope that the elections are going to protect our civil liberties, and we're going to get good people in there. We hope that they're going to put in somebody in the Supreme Court that's going to look out for our liberties. But... You know, the reality of this is that, you know, we have to do it ourselves. And even though we have some victories on some of these ballot initiatives, you know, when I look at the legalization of marijuana, for example, it was only about 2 weeks ago that New Jersey weed man won a unanimous, acquittal based on jury nullification. Because, you know, when you go before a jury, if you will have the guts to take your case towards a jury, what he calculated was he knew that about half the people in this country believe that marijuana should not be a crime. And so he didn't say that he had, he didn't make any bones about the fact that he had violated the New Jersey law. What he did was he pointed out to the jurors that in the New Jersey Constitution, it explicitly says that they're there not to just to judge the facts of the case, but to judge the law itself. And he told them, he said, you know, the law is wrong. I'm a cancer patient. I need this stuff. And, you know, it's a ridiculous law. You should judge this law. And they did. And, you know, if only one out of 12 people will, come up and stand against unjust laws, that's a much better, way to protect our liberties than to hope that we're going to get somebody elected as president that's going to appoint somebody as Supreme Court justice who's going to maybe, you know, support our liberties. We have to do it ourselves, and we can do it ourselves. It only takes one person on a jury. The kind of catch 22, though, is that for so long, you know, juries have not been functioning as real jurors, that people are afraid to go before a jury. And so 95%+ of the cases that come up are plea bargain, because people are afraid that the jurors aren't going to stand up for their rights. But, you know, we have to, through education, we have to tell people about these powerful tools. That's something that doesn't require, that they can't cheat us on. You know, if people know what the truth is, the judges will lie, the judges will intimidate. But if people really know what their rights and their duties are, they'll stand up for that. So, I mean, that's one example of where we can.
But I just want to point out, too, it's about the nullification factor. It's about taking power back that was usurped by the federal government. giving it back to states and individuals. Marijuana itself, I mean, a lot of people despise the drug culture and look down upon anyone caught up in that system, but you've got a lot of people caught up. I mean, you've got how many people in prison? It's a record population that makes the rest of the world pale in comparison. It's a shame of our nation. You've got so many minorities caught up in that system who are being harmed by it, from a black president who claimed he wasn't going to aggressively pursue marijuana, who admitted he smoked it himself, that he inhaled. That was the point, he said. And yet they aggressively pursued California, who were kind of the iconic main place in the nation where it had been legalized. The dispensaries have their own controversies, but he sent in the DEA to shut those places down to teach them a lesson. Now, this election has been a brushing back of that usurped federal power in Colorado, in Washington, to a lesser extent in the other states. I don't remember them offhand, but we've covered them. And the point
is, that's going to be interesting.
It doesn't have to be marijuana. It's about the power of the drug war. It's taken over this country.
That's right. And it's going to be interesting to see if he pushes this. You know, you've actually legalized it in two states now. So it's going to be interesting to see what Obama and the feds do with that, what the DEA does with that, if they're going to challenge that like they did in California. Now, one of the aspects of California, it was just medical marijuana, and they allowed a lot of discretion at the local level. So in L.A., people are getting, you know, getting the law enforcement to come down on them really hard. But in other places like Oakland, they let it go. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in those two states, how it plays out, for example, in Michigan. It's going to be interesting to see that, how that goes. But, you know, you mentioned the Secretary and Secretary of the Treasury people. One of those names was somebody that I know something about. I didn't know about most of them, but Erskine Bowles is somebody that hails from North Carolina. He's run for Senate twice there, and of course, as you mentioned, he was chief of staff for the Clinton administration. Now, he was deeply embedded in the financial, he was a real player in the financial community in Charlotte. Nations Bank was a very large bank, and if you remember, in the early 90s, or early part of the Clinton administration, I believe is when it happened, there was a merger between Nations Bank and Bank of America. And Bank of America was in California. They merged the two together. And even though they took the name Bank of America, it was really, they went to the headquarters of Nations Bank in Charlotte. They moved all their operations to Charlotte. Charlotte became a huge financial center. But most importantly, it was the largest merger they'd ever had. And it really set a precedent. And once that happened, all these other banks started merging. And you know what we got was too big to fail. And in less than, in about 10 years, you know, we had this massive catastrophe. Now, the same thing, now he was a player in all that. The same thing is happening again, talking about the power companies. The same thing is happening again in North Carolina. Again, you've got somebody, this guy is Jim Rogers. And just like Erskine Bowles, he's a very well-connected player in the Democrat Party. They just gave a loan guarantee, the power company did, to the Democrat National Convention. When they had their convention in Charlotte, they guaranteed them, gave them a loan guarantee of $10 million. He downplayed that, saying, well, it's just a loan guarantee, but they actually did use that line of credit. Now, this guy has been very controversial, has gone into all these different alternative energy schemes that cost a fortune compared to the traditional ways of getting energy and don't work very well. But they've merged, and now again, they've created the largest power company in the country. And that, I think, is going to be, I think we're going to see something play out along those lines, kind of like what we did with the free-for-all with the bank mergers. And once we see that, that's going to be a lot of pressure, you know, to for these large, just a few large companies are going to wind up controlling all the energy. And they've already got things like these renewable mandates and stuff. And just one last thing I wanted to say about that. You know, if you look at this carbon tax credit thing, it looks exactly like the Federal Reserve Act of 100 years ago, in a sense, right? You had all these guys come together, and they say they're going to create the Federal Reserve, and we're all going to pay them interest. You know, to this private corporation, we're going to pay them interest for the money that they're going to print. And now we've got this carbon tax thing, right? It's going to be privately owned. We don't know who's going to own it, but we're all going to pay them money.
Pay them to rig the market.
Yeah, pay them to rig the money. I mean, it's a classic bankster takeover, but now they've moved from the national level to the global level. And this carbon tax thing is going to do to us on a global level what the Federal Reserve has done to our money, but it's also going to make energy incredibly expensive. It's yet another way they're going to attack energy. You know, first they're going to consolidate into a few companies, then they're going to move it to some kind of a global tax, And, you know, if you look at energy, the one thing that affects our standard of living, both in terms of the quality of our life, and also, you can show by studies, the quantity of our life, it's the availability of cheap energy. And we have more coal in this country than the Middle East has oil. But we're not allowed to use it. As you pointed out, Aaron, you know, there's clean ways to burn that coal. But of course, they want to shut that down because they want to shut down American energy.
And I don't want to pollute industry. Either. I want clean coal if coal is what we're going to use. But it's a game system. But what you said is exactly correct. I don't know if you know about this. I have a feeling you probably do. There's a documentary, very well produced, extremely well researched, based on a book that examined all the facts, and they have real audio recordings in this documentary. It is, of course, Enron, the smartest guys in the room. Today, mm-hmm. we know Enron is one of the biggest scam firms around. Their assets weren't where they claimed to be. They gamed the market. But what they did in California was they got I want to say it was Schwarzenegger. Regardless, it was one of the governors who deregulated the power rules, and they went in there and controlled that system and artificially shut down supply so they could jack up prices, not 3 times, not 4 times, not 10 times, in many documented cases, 50 times the market price of energy, and they sucked money out of granny's bank accounts, and they're on tape laughing about it, cursing about it, joking with each other about, can we shut down the power again today? Oh, yeah, I'll come up with an excuse. And that's exactly what we see throughout this whole corrupt system you're describing. There was just another case last week where they got caught gaming the energy supply system from one of these big banks that received, of course, bailout funds. They all did. And the people we're talking about for Treasury Secretary, the figures you're talking about who are involved in gaming energy and everything else, these are criminals. These are the people in the back room. Mm-hmm. They're our top suspects. But instead, we're lining them up to be honored and given this title of you are Secretary of Treasury. You really know something about the economy in this country, and we're really going to look to you and pretend to care about what you say. I mean, Tim Geithner has been a joke in Congress. His blatantly ridiculous excuses have just been a stunning act to bat you over the head to keep you from going after the real criminals before you realize how badly you've been raped and looted. It just goes on and on from there, but you know the kind of people I'm talking about. We need to be investigating these people. John Corzine was governor before he was part of MF Global. They're all part of criminal scams that are hidden behind that criminal line because there's bureaucracy, red tape, paperwork, because the public can't follow these details, David.
That's right. It's usual suspects, isn't it?
And they're controlling the food markets and everything else we're depending on.
That's right. It's just a few people getting control of everything. I mean, that's what we see over and over again. And now they're moving from the national level to the global level. Well, that brings us to our quote of the day. Our quote of the day, and we got that ready, guys? Our quote of the day is, there we are. We'll try to cooperate fully with the IRS because as citizens, we feel a strong patriotic duty not to go to jail. Dave Barry, one of my favorite political commentators, he's always got an interesting take on things. We're going to be right back after a short break. We're going to be right back with Melissa Melton to give us her take on the election.
President Barack Barry Obama, and you're watching continual coverage of the 2012 presidential election here on Infowars.com.
We have been robbed. Globalism has been a curse to this country. Everything the globalists are doing worldwide is about making you dependent. I'm getting storable food. You need it because it's the only insurance that you can 100% use. I have, you know, family that are veterans and people like that who can't live off their Social Security, who are disabled and things. And that's why I bought so much food. Charity starts at home. I promote what I believe in 100%. And I believe in what they're doing 100%. And the globalists do not want you to be self-sufficient. I hope you will take action. Get the 6 free meals when you pay for the shipping so that you can eat them and see that it's quality. That's why I chose eFoods, is I did my research, I tested a bunch, bought a bunch. The other stuff was like cardboard or filled with MSG or made in China. So bottom line, folks, eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. Follow the banners at Infowars.com or call the toll-free number 800-409-5633. That's 800-409-5633. Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals. But the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com. Sign up as a distributor and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com.
Welcome back. We're joined tonight here in the studio by Melissa Melton. Now, Melissa was covering elections last night live on location, and we got we're going to talk to her a little bit about that. David Ortiz is also doing that. We'll be talking to him later. Melissa, tell us a little bit about your coverage last night.
Well, I was at a polling station for a while, and then I ended up going over to the Travis County Republican Party's election night shindig. So for a while, I just mainly talked to people as they came out after voting, and I seemed to get a majority of Obama voters. And I think overall what really worried me about the night was that all of the Romney voters, Romney people at the party, seemed to feel like he was going to bring in really small government. And all of the people who were going to vote for Obama had absolutely no idea what the NDAA was. And so the whole thing just was worrisome, basically. But we're going to go to a couple of clips. So.
Yeah, it's kind of sad too that they put everything on just those two offices, because, you know, we had a Senate race in Texas, and the Republicans had something to cheer about there, but it sounds like they were pretty upset.
After Obama was declared the winner, nobody would even barely speak to me. I got one guy, and we're going to show him. But yeah, after he was the winner, there was just angry faces and people wanting to leave. They didn't even want to speak to us.
That's interesting. So. That's interesting. Well, let's take a look at some of the clips here, I guess. Guy's got some clips for us.
What are five things that you think Obama did well as president?
I think he did a good job reaching across the aisle. I think that he was more of a unifying president than George Bush was. I'm a supporter of Obamacare all the way. Under his watch, he decreased piracy. He killed Osama bin Laden. So how many is that? Four? Yeah, and he also worked on through the auto bailout and also the Dodd-Frank Act and decreasing bailouts to corporations that were circumventing the law. So those are, I mean, that, in a nutshell, those are things.
Wasn't the auto bailout a bailout to corporations?
The auto bailout was, yes. I mean, by definition, it was to save jobs and to save the industry.
To China?
They actually, GM used the money to ship our jobs to China.
According to who?
According to GM.
Tell me what are you citing here?
That's on record. Like, they've actually used the money from, like, just all you have to do is Google it. You just have to Google GM bailout.
For me, I don't know. Yeah.
I would if I had a computer. What are five things you think Obama did well as president?
Will you help me on this?
What's one thing you think he did?
Well, honestly, I think that trying to be partisan was really an important gesture, although it ended up, being undermining, I think, the change that he hopes to, or he projected that he might make. But I think that was important.
Revealing Don't Ask
Donald. Yeah. Major. And the
healthcare reform
and I forgot the name of it, one of the ones he passed, Lilly Ledbetter. Yeah.
So what's your favorite thing about President Obama? Did they just announce it? Wow. Well, there you have it. According to what we're watching here, we got another 4 years of Barack Obama. We have another 4 years of the establishment getting their puppet to basically do whatever it is that they want. Everybody out here is apparently ecstatic because they have no idea what kind of tyranny we're about to further slide into. I almost really want to cry right now. I think I'm going to have to cut in a second so that I can go do that because I'm just really sad. Although, if Romney won, I'd probably be doing the same thing. This is Melissa Mountain reporting for InfoWars Nightly News, and I'm going to go be sick. What do you think about the fact that they're calling it for Obama?
Well, it's quite disappointing. Obviously, America's made a choice. They want more wealth distribution as opposed to more jobs. Very disappointing for your average working American. Very disappointing for unemployed people. Ironically, unemployed people are voting for a candidate who won't deliver them a higher standard of living. I don't understand it.
What do you think is going to happen to America under 4 more years of Obama?
Not a lot that's good. You're burying yourself under a mountain of debt here. There's a regulation that's killing jobs, and Romney had a plan to dig America out, and it looks like it's not going to happen now.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, that last guy seemed like he had it until he said Romney had a plan.
Yeah,
he lost me at that point.
I mean, everybody's tied into the two-party system. Mm-hmm. They don't think there's any other options, so it's just the lesser of two evils. And again, it's like, well, how do you feel voting for evil?
Yeah, yeah. And they're just kind of repeating sound bites that they hear. You know, I think about that one lady who said, yeah, he was trying to be partisan. It's like, well, he actually was pretty partisan, I think. I think she meant bipartisan, yeah.
Yeah, no.
But the fact that the guy didn't realize that, you know, said he had decreased bailouts, didn't realize that he had bailed out General Motors, and then when he said he'd shipped the jobs to China, he doesn't realize that the automobile manufacturing plants have moved to China.
Well, as a matter of fact, after the camera got cut, that guy goes, oh, wait, you're with Info Wars? Oh, like suddenly because we're with InfoWars, we don't have any kind of facts to back up what we're saying.
Right, right. You know? Yeah. Well, I mean, we're not the only ones to report that China has been getting our automobile factories after the bailout. That's amazing.
Yeah.
But what other issues were you following?
Well, here? I mean, for me, I mean, I knew either way it was going to be Romney or Obama, or Bomney, it's hard to say it, Romney or Obama. And so it really wasn't going to matter because the establishment was going to continue with their plan. Mm-hmm. But the saddest thing for me about last night was Prop 37's defeat. I really cannot believe that actually was defeated in any legitimate way.
Yeah, because you covered that quite extensively. You did a long special report on that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they spent, the opposition spent, what, $45 million, and they claimed it was because they were going to save Californian families $400. Mm-hmm. Makes no sense. Then you have American Academy of Pediatrics coming out saying organic food's not good for your kids, and there's no scientific proof that pesticide is bad for you, and it's just like, where are we living? What matrix are we in?
And it's not just the amount of money that they spent, you know, spending like $1 million a day there, but they were spending it telling people lies. Good. I mean, it was like, it was not even white propaganda, it was black propaganda. You know, they were deliberately telling people lies. They were, the Democrat Party was supporting that measure in California, and they put out a flyer saying something about California Democrats against, you know, truth and labeling or whatever. They didn't call it truth and labeling, because they wouldn't do that. But, you know, they posed as that. They posed as law enforcement officers against GMO labeling. And why would law enforcement officers even have a position on that? I mean, that, you know, they're not going to be going around arresting people for that. And this whole thing about $400, I mean, you know, we have labels there, you know, and but even if that were true, Californians passed a tax increase on themselves. You know, so it's just what, I mean, you know, that one of the measures that passed, you know, Jerry Brown came to them and said, you know, he wanted a tax increase, and they gave him an income tax increase, and they gave him a sales tax increase for one of the other propositions. So it absolutely makes no sense to me. And, you know, like Bev Harris said, you know, they still haven't even counted 25% of the votes. So we don't know.
We don't even know what they're calling, right?
Yeah.
They're
we don't even know if it's exactly. We don't know that it's honestly being counted, just like all the other elections. And, you know, the agribusiness had a lot more money involved in this, a lot more at stake in this than they did in the presidential election. And we know how things have been rigged in the presidential election.
Definitely. Well, speaking of junk and food, I brought this in here with me. I came across this at a store. Save the Earth gum. Save the Earth. It says products for good. Project 7, products for good. And I decided to turn it over and actually look at the label and look at what was in it. And I found a lot of interesting information about this, so I decided to file this special report we're going to go to. I'm Melissa Melton reporting for InfoWars Nightly News. Project 7, a nonprofit organization, has come out with a trendy new gum product that it claims you can save the earth if you buy it. And while saving the earth might sound like a wonderful thing to do, upon further inspection, things are not what they seem with this wonderful new gum. This gum contains deadly food additives such as aspartame, neotame, and genetically modified soy lecithin. Aspartame has been linked in studies to causing everything from blindness to liver damage to seizures. It's been linked to different cancers such as lymphoma, and it even eats holes in the brains of lab animals that it's tested on and eventually causes death. Neotame is far worse, and in long-term studies causes cell death. Now, soy lecithin has been shown to mimic estrogen in the body, causing everything from reproductive issues to cancer to impeding brain development in people who ingest it. Now, in addition, Project 7 has partnered with and given thousands of dollars to Kony 2012 war propagandists, Invisible Children. Now, if you'll recall, they put out a whole call for military intervention into Uganda to go after warlord Joseph Kony, who hadn't even been seen in the country for years. In addition, there's a little bit of an issue with some of the management there at Invisible Children, as we'll see as we go to these clips.
Oh, what?
That's not your average crazy person going on a naked, obscenity-filled rant in the middle of the day. It's Jason Russell.
Now, in analyzing that, you'll see Jason Russell, co-founder of Invisible Children, going on a drug-induced naked tirade through town shortly following his Kony 2012 video release.
We want $1 million, so... There's here $100,000 for Haiti and $900,000 extra for me.
In that clip you just saw, Jedediah Jenkins, Invisible Children director of ideology, drinking vodka and talking about how he just got a $1 million grant for children's relief after the Haiti earthquake, of which $100,000 would go to the children and $900,000 he would keep for himself. Really makes you feel like you want to donate money to these guys. Now, in addition, Project 7 has also partnered and funds two organizations that are co-funded by known elite eugenicist Bill Gates and his Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and Oprah.
has recently been seen giving out water from Project 7 at some of her events. As you might recall, Oprah likes to take part in secret meetings with known eugenicists Ted Turner, Warren Buffett, and David Rockefeller and Bill Gates, where population control seems to be the constant topic of discussion. So there you have it. Companies like to sell you the trendy idea of saving the earth, that you're going to do something great, it's going to be really good. And in the meantime, you're also co-funding eugenicist organizations and organizations run by corrupt people and basically killing yourself with deadly chemicals. So check those labels, guys. I'm Melissa Melton reporting for InfoWars Nightly News.
Well, that's pretty amazing. I wonder what the GMO people are concerned about. I mean, people still buy this stuff even though it's got all
those
products.
Even with some of those things labeled. This is actually being sold at 1,500 Walmart supercenters across the country. That's who they first started selling it through. And then other big box stores. And it doesn't just have aspartame. It has Neotame, which is so much worse. It has everything that aspartame has in it, plus even more chemicals. And there have been no independent studies on it. So the only, speaking of Prop 37, the only companies that have done studies on it are Monsanto and Monsanto consultant groups.
Oh, we can trust them, right?
Basically, you know, you can plant a tree, but you're probably going to kill yourself.
Well, it operates exactly like these carbon taxes and credits, you know, getting people very guilty, you know, and kind of giving them something to assuage their guilt by, you know, to buy their product or that sort of thing. Yes. Exactly what Aaron was talking about.
Save the earth, kill yourself.
That's right. And we've got Aaron now back in the other studio, and he's with David Ortiz, who was also doing live remotes last night during the zombie election. And so, Aaron, are you there?
We are here. Thank you, David. And, of course, I am joined by David Ortiz. We talked about the election at the presidential level last night. We've analyzed the rhetoric, but beyond the rhetoric of who's going to be president and what that supposedly means, we live on the ground. There's a grassroots political movement taking shape. We depend on our water systems, on our transportation systems, and there's a lot of politics over that as well. So I'm going to turn now to David to analyze just a few of those issues. Now, what have you been noticing, and what kind of issues are you following right now, David?
Well, there's a lot of issues, but very quickly I actually saw this piece of paper here, Hail Caesar. It's, oh, Caesar. It's pretty amazing how happy people are that President Barack Obama is our Lord for the next 4 years. So that was pretty amazing. That's the New York Post. But focusing on other issues that have just been going on, obviously one of our concerns is the growing police state and how it may go to overdrive. You were talking about the election or issues that...
Yeah, we're talking about your stories.
Okay. Yeah, the growing police state is obviously a concern of ours. We think that it's going to go into overdrive now that America has chosen its next president. And here in Baltimore, Baltimore is now recording conversations on city buses. And that's according to an article on The New American. And essentially, Maryland Transit Administration has installed microphones in 10 buses to record passenger conversations. The microphones, which the city plans to install in 330 more buses by next summer, are attached to the existing video surveillance system monitoring the city's public transportation. And according to an MTA administrator, she was quoted as saying, quote, "We want to make sure people feel safe, and this builds up our arsenal of tools to keep our patrons safe." How nice. And later on, by the way, a liberal drafted this. I thought liberals were for civil liberties, were against the Patriot Act, George Bush was evil.
No, that's the thing, David. It doesn't matter who becomes president, what party's in power. They always have to endorse the power grab, especially if it takes over your life, especially if it spies on you. I mean, that's what the TSA has been all about.
Yeah, that's why it's so amazing when liberals are drafting this legislation. But let me let you know what a state legislator by the name of Melvin Stooks, a liberal, had to say. Quote, "This is not your bathroom. This is not your bedroom. I'm just trying to clean up problems and provide a more congenial, more cordial ride." You know, so he obviously thinks that, you know, these conversations need to be recorded because, according to the MTA, dispatchers receive 45 to 100 calls daily for assistance from bus drivers for everything from an unhappy rider to criminal activity. So this is going to grow. They plan on taking this to court. Some liberals in the state, I do commend them, are acting like liberals, and they plan on taking this to court. They think it's unconstitutional. But the mere fact that we have to have this conversation in 2012 as to whether people should... our conversations should be recorded on a bus stop just shows how lost our public officials really are.
Orwell warned us for a long time, but that's the thing. They're alluding to kind of sad people on buses, low-income people, people without a lot of hope in yet another broken-down, former industrialized city, Baltimore, that really has just been overtaken by poverty. And, of course, there's bad behavior on buses. There's ways to deal with that already. They're trying to use that as a face to sell us on more tyranny. As you know, I think you've got it in your stack as well. The TSA has announced, Homeland Security has announced, they are coming to our bus systems. They're coming to trains. They're going to be in the malls, the shopping centers. And already in Houston, they beta tested, but locally activist groups pushed back against it. They were doing random bag checks. They had undercovers from Homeland Security and TSA on the buses. They were working with the local metro departments telling you, you have no constitutional rights because you're on a public transit system.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. And according to that article that you were talking about TSA, it's on Infowars.com, there's a security expert that's quoted. His name is Ed Daly. And he basically says that there's going to be software now that can instantly read, record, and categorize everything about your person from face to face to from your face to your license plate, he says. And he says that that must be expanded to all public buildings and modes of transportations, airplanes to trains, buses and subways. So the growing police state is here. And now that we've got the presidential election out of the way, you can expect them to double down on, infringing upon our civil liberties.
Well, first it's because you might be a terrorist, but then it's because you might be committing petty crime. You might be, fighting on the bus or getting on without paying your bus ticket or something.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about security. It's all about we're doing this for your security. And this is basically going to come down to the courts. This is basically going to come down to the courts. These issues will be tried. And it's going to be interesting to see if the courts side with the people or with the legislatures. But, yeah, that's going on in Baltimore right now. They're basically have the ability to record your conversations. They're going to expand it throughout the city, and their justification for it is they want to have evidence just in case something criminal happens on the buses. So we should thank Baltimore for that. They obviously care about the American people.
It's pre-crime, pre-crime monitoring, just like Orwell warned about. I mean, it's the system they've gradually built up over 100 years. In fact, Alex was talking on the show earlier about where does George Orwell's philosophy come from? Why does it counter people like Aldous Huxley, who wrote Brave New World? These are the Fabian socialists. That means they believed in gradual, incremental, continued implementation of their socialist policies, a little bit at a time, just a little bit, but always moving it forward. So nobody ever really says no, and you just learn to accept you're being surveilled, you're scum, you could be a terrorist, you don't have rights out in public anymore. It's very sad, but it just rolls forward.
Yeah, conditioning. Let's push the issue as far as possible, and when we get some blowback, we'll just pull back and we'll say we're good like that. You know, we honor your civil liberties. But then once the public goes back to sleep again, here comes the move, the push forward. So yeah, it's all about conditioning.
Oh, I agree. It's conditioning. What else do you have for us?
Well, just in some good news, we want to focus on, the Patriots, things that have, positive things that have occurred. Some libertarians, some constitutionalists did win yesterday. They were supported by Ron Paul. Some of the Ron Paul endorsed candidates didn't win, but let's just do a run through of, some of the Ron Paul endorsed candidates who did win. Obviously the most popular one is a gentleman by the name of Justin Amash. He's the guy that people are saying is going to take the mantle. I'm not so convinced of that, the Ron Paul mantle. He's a young guy, 32 years old. He's in Michigan, the 3rd district, and he was reelected by a margin of 58-39%. So obviously, that's good to see. Then we have a gentleman by the name of Thomas Massey. He's also very popular as well. He won in Kentucky, the 4th district, by a margin of 62-35. His name is Thomas Massey. He's out in Kentucky. Again, these individuals were all supported by Congressman Ron Paul. There's a gentleman by the name of Bentiviolo. And he's in Michigan as well. So it's good to see that the state of Michigan is not completely lost, as we see in the city of Detroit. They have some patriots up there. He's in District 11 in Michigan. Congressman Steve Stockman in Texas, 36th District. He was elected. He's endorsed by the Congressman Paul. Businessman Randy Weber. He's in Texas's 14th congressional district. Mm-hmm. He won by a margin of 53 to 45. A gentleman by the name of Ted Yoho. He's in Florida, 3rd congressional district. He won. A gentleman in Arizona's 6th district by the name of David. This is not an easy last name. Also, Schweikert. He won. Congressman Walter Jones, obviously the gentleman who Alex has interviewed at length. He's drafted the bill to impeach Obama. For going
or any president who doesn't recognize the constitutional limits when it comes to going to war, dealing with the United Nations, all kinds of issues.
Yeah, notice how that bill...
And he's not perfect, probably none of these people are, but it's about moving towards liberty, back towards the Constitution.
Right, absolutely. He's basically saying that the president, President Obama, took action in Libya without congressional approval, a complete violation of the U.S. Constitution. Obviously, the mainstream media doesn't even talk about it. They don't even talk about Congressman Walter Jones's bill. I haven't even heard about this bill outside of Alex's show. But he, you know, he's a patriot. He was elected. He's out of North Carolina, their 3rd district. It's about a dozen people in total. Ron Paul candidate got clobbered in the U.S. Senate, out in Minnesota. Well, Ted Cruz won. He's out in Texas and he won. Congressman Paul did endorse him. The gentleman who I was talking about a second ago, his name is Kurt Bills and he lost by a hefty margin. And yeah, these are some of the people that lost, but we don't want to focus too much on that. It seems that about 8 to 10, Ron Paul representatives, in Congress won. So it's good to see. It's not all, pure tyranny.
And again, that's at the congressional level. At the local level, people probably listening to this show, people who've learned and listened from Ron Paul's message, other people in the Liberty Movement, they ran for smaller offices. You could do it. People out there watching right now, you could run next time. Sure, it may cost a lot to try to get into Congress or your state Senate, but there's something you can run for and make a difference and at least be heard. And we saw a big grassroots movement. The system heard it. They knew that Ron Paul was backed by a large portion of masses, people who are educated, who want to talk about the Constitution. And a lot of these candidates I've heard about, I'm not fully in support of any of them necessarily per se. I like where they're trying to move. You get a lot of co-optation, a lot of people who are power hungry trying to latch onto the Liberty Movement. I'm not referring to these candidates in particular, but the overall movement for freedom has been heard. It's encouraging. It's exciting. We saw the system shut us out of this election and say, no, Ron Paul can't be a legitimate candidate. Your supporters aren't welcome at the GOP. You're not welcome in this process. And a lot of them are licking their wounds now because they wanted to buy into the system, see a Romney type win. And what did they get?
Do you think they could have used an extra 4% support last night?
Yeah, you think 4% is all the people behind Ron Paul? I think we know it's much larger than that, and they've been shutting down the polls. They've been keeping them off of the television. They've been pointing cameras away from their signs. They've been trying to exclude their candidates and their representatives and their lobbyists. By lobbyists, I just mean people who are out there talking about the issues, not paid lobbyists like we see in Washington necessarily. The point is the system hurt us. They framed the debate so that the rest of the zombies watching TV wouldn't hear it. Hopefully, not yet, but we're on the march.
Absolutely, and not only that, but he would have siphoned off some votes of had they embraced the GOP, Ron Paul, he would have taken they would have taken some votes away from the Democratic Party also. But and just so you know, I think it was Chuck Scarborough, the congressman on MSNBC, the former congressman, when they were licking their wounds today and they went to him, he's the Republican representative, they asked him, what do you think about the election? And it's on video. He said, you know what, the more I went out there on the campaign trail to support Romney this election season, mm-hmm. the more I realized this country is becoming more and more libertarian.
Oh, yeah, it's a big streak. Now, let's talk about what happened on the ballot with fluoride this mm-hmm. time. I believe it's Wichita, Kansas was kind of the big watershed moment, I guess pun intended, with our water supply system. Why don't you go ahead and tell us what's going on with that?
Well, Wichita, Kansas, a relatively large city, they voted down. They rejected fluoridated water. And, you know, that's nice to see because it's few and far in between. About 75% of the country, according to the Wichita Eagle, has fluoridated water. So it's good to see that a quarter of the country still hasn't bought it in, bought into fluoridating our water. Basically, there's not too many cities now aside from Wichita that have done this, but some of the cities, according to fluoridealert.org, that have not fluoridated their water. Large cities, Honolulu, Hawaii has held out. That's good. Pinellas County, Florida.
Well, that was a big victory. That was some of our listeners who went to their city council, said no. They said hell no. And then when they got their voices heard, they got the fluoride out real quick and they had to send in lawyers to try to get it back in. All of a sudden, no amount of money is too much to bring in dental experts and people who tell you how good it is for your teeth and how all the masses need to be drinking this mass medicated water with effects on our endocrine system, on our pineal gland, on different parts of the body. It's very damaging. There's been studies, the Harvard study showing that it lowers IQ, and yet we're told don't do it. But you've got Wichita, huge victory. It was a large population, one of the largest population holdouts on the fluoride issue. Wichita, they've put it on the ballot, I think, 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, they voted.
That's what, a city of half a million people almost?
They keep on voting it down. In 64, they voted it down. In 78, they voted it down. And then they voted it down again.
And I know some of our listeners here at InfoWars, We Are Change groups, fought in Wichita, Kansas over this issue. They were at their city council, and here they've made a difference. They had a ballot victory. And they make those hard.
Now, from what I understand, in local council chambers, the experts are now, they're now refuting that Harvard study. Is that right? Have you heard about that, where they're now refuting the Harvard?
They are arguing over a very minute point. See, what happened was they tested it on Chinese populations, and they said fluoride at this particular level reduces IQ. I think it was 1.5 parts per million. I'm going from memory. I don't have the study in front of me. The point is, it was a certain threshold, and they said, well, that was a high threshold. So if you only have 0.7 parts per million fluoride in your water, surely that won't reduce IQ. Even though it's a cumulative effect, you're going to not drink one glass of water. You're going to drink hundreds, thousands of glasses of water, tens of thousands, I don't know the real number, over your lifetime. If you're part of a fluoridated water supply, this stuff is going to catch up on you.
Yeah, absolutely. But, it, you know, again, it's good to see that at least Wichita, Kansas did it, folks. So, you know, there are some city, we are winning. I mean, obviously, we'd like to win a lot more, but there you go. And another city that has held out, a large city, Albuquerque, New Mexico also.
Yeah. And parts of the country where you still find free people, people who want to be independent from the centralized government. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see this kind of victory happen in the big mega urban centers. You know, a New York City might be too big of a prize for right now. But those kind of larger cities, we're going to begin to have victories there. The Pinellas County example you had, I think that was a population approaching, 700,000, almost a million people in that county regional area. And they got the fluoride out. Now, as I mentioned, the bureaucrats are trying to get it back in, but we're going to roll this thing back. People are being educated about it. And when you read into the history of fluoride, who's behind it, it's going to shock you.
Yeah, absolutely. We also have a story. I don't know how we're doing on in terms of time, but we have a story that I wanted to touch base on very quickly. David Knight touched base on it. It's California passed a major, major tax hike. Because they, you know, they care about the public, $6 billion. And it's basically a tax for, individuals who make over $250,000, a year. It's going to be for the next 7 years. And, they're basically saying it is being, it's being done to prevent spending cuts, because we don't want those. That would be horrible. To the state's universities and public school system. Of course, because the school system is doing so good. 60% of our children can't even read or do math proficiently. Insisting that...
But always the solution is more funding. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Absolutely. Yeah, that's always... They always double down on the funding, despite the fact that private schools, their proficiency rates are at 90% and they spend less money. We need to double down on public schools. But it's basically for the public school system, insisting that rejecting Prop 30 would translate into a $6 billion spending cut to schools, tuition, universities, K through 12. So there you go. Jerry Brown increased taxes by $6 billion. It won by about 8.
And they'll do it everywhere. It doesn't matter how bad the economy is, how much people don't want more taxes, how much more freedom they might want. I know the ballot here in Austin, they split up nearly $500 million in bond measures over 7 to 10 measures and said, do you want to spend $100 million for this, $30 million for this, how about $12 million for this? It becomes voter fatigue after a while. You can't follow the details. People get in the habit of just pushing yes. They approve these measures all the time. Just more power, more money for any government, anywhere. Anyway, I know we have a clip from last night. Let's take a look at it right now.
What do you think about the president's track record on civil liberties?
On civil liberties?
Yes, like the Patriot Act, and he signed, both candidates support the Patriot Act. Both candidates support a bill called NDAA, which would basically enable the president to throw someone in jail for as long as they want without a trial. If they deem them a terrorist. What are your thoughts on that? And both candidates support it.
You know, I'm going to have to answer that really diplomatically, is that I'm unfamiliar with those issues, and so I don't think I can speak really intelligently.
Really, I'm just looking for, you know, a president like President Obama who has a cool head and makes rational decisions and, you know, isn't going to make any, you know, rash decisions and, you know, we'll maintain world peace, I hope.
I think he's done a pretty amazing job dealing with a hostile Congress.
What would you say to those who say he's not very good on civil liberties? The Democrats always criticize Bush with the Patriot Act, but he supports the Patriot Act, NDAA, things like that.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, I think there probably isn't, you know, as much of a distinction between Obama and Bush as a lot of us would like. I think you're right. I think to a large extent, Obama has kind of towed the Bush line on that. So I'm hoping, you know, in President Obama's next term that he can perhaps work on that issue.
President Obama has done so much for diversity and tolerance and gay marriage and issues that promote diversity and equality.
Now, what do you think, lastly, what do you think about his record on civil liberties? Democrats bashed Bush a lot when he was in office with Patriot Act, but it seems that Obama supports the Patriot Act, NDAA. What's your take on that?
Nothing's happened in the last 4 years. No attacks in this country. And he got Bin Laden, which Bush failed to do.
So there you go. You have, you know, supporters of Obama saying that he's so different despite the fact that he's a clone of Mitt Romney. One thing I noticed when I was there at the Democratic headquarters was they kept on talking about women's rights, women's right to choose. And, oh, we love women so much because of the abortion issue. When 40% of women are pro-life, when these
are life givers,
right? When they're basically killing future women, millions of future women, and when 75% of the country is either pro-life or they don't want to see anything past the first trimester.
David, you can read, these are TV watchers. That woman made clear they're very familiar with what they're told top down on television. They can't think, David. They don't know anything other than how to regurgitate what's been said. They don't know what a civil liberty is. They don't know what the NDAA is. You saw it in the clip. They don't know what's really going on in this country, where the power dynamic is, and that's why you hear these talking points. It's really shocking. I hadn't seen this clip.
Reproductive rights. There's no reproducing going on if you have an abortion. So I have no idea what they're talking about. It's these little phrases that I don't understand. But again, a Gallup is either Pew or Gallup shows that 75% of Americans, this is a poll, are either pro-life or they don't want an abortion past the first trimester. Yet you keep on hearing about this, you know, reproductive rights. It's amazing. And it's all about, you know, conning you, you know. They love you if you kill them. That's what you see with abortion. Or you really love someone if you make them dependent on the government. So I just don't understand these mantras. But yeah, they sounded pretty ridiculous when we were there. And now we're going to go to his name is his last name is Sadler. I forgot his first name. Sadler. He ran against a U.S. Senator, Ted Cruz, and we actually pulled him aside and we got a one-on-one with him. He was a very nice man.
If you had to give President Barack Obama a grade for his first term, from an A to an F, what would you give him?
You know what? I think grades are unfair, and so I'm not even going to answer that question.
In terms of civil liberties, both President Bush and President Obama had their critics because they both agreed with the Patriot Act, NDAA. Your thoughts on the fact that both parties support NDAA and the Patriot Act?
Well, you know, it's puzzling to me because the president ran so strong on that issue last time. And the only thing that I can say is I'm not, and nor are you, privy to all the security information they have. And so I'm just not in a position where I'm going to criticize that at this stage.
So there you go. I'm not privy, so maybe it's justifiable. You know, that's Republicans say that with war. Maybe we should have gone to war with Iraq because the president was privy to information we were not. It's this continual justification. Whenever my team, whenever my gang violates the Constitution, I'm going to look the other way. But when your gang violates the Constitution, you're evil.
It is a endorsement of the black ops culture that has taken over this country. We're not privy to anything in this country. We're not educated about it unless we seek that information out ourselves. And at the congressional and Senate level, when they do make them privy to information, they make them sign away their rights to talk about it. They're told it's classified. They feel let in on the culture of being in on the black op takeover government. And I could rant about it, but I won't. I'll go now to David Knight. We've got more news over there. Jakari also in the office. David.
Yeah, there you go. If they told you, they'd have to kill you. It's kind of what what people did with the Nazis, basically, right? You just obey authority. Whatever the authority figures tell you, you do that. I mean, I'm glad to see that Sadler didn't win for Senate there. But yeah, we're continuing, and as we saw this lady who says she can't speak to the NDAA and these people who really don't know the issues, that's why we call it the zombie election. And we're here with our live postmortem. If you're streaming it off of Prison Planet TV, we're doing it for free, as we did our coverage last night. If you enjoy the coverage, find it useful, informative, we ask that you help to support the operation here and get a subscription. I'm here in the studio with Jakari Jackson, and he was here last night covering the election. Jakari, you've got some more postmortem stuff here about this election.
Yes, I do. Just to comment on that piece that David Ortiz did, it just makes me laugh when I hear people say, yeah, I support Obama, but they never heard of the NDAA. Not even, they're not sure, like the guy said, he's not privy to all the information. Well, I'm sure he knows, but other people in the clip, they've never heard of this. You know, same thing with Melissa Mellon's clip, but we're not going to tarry on that. I actually have some articles here, guys. If you can get ready, we're going to blow through these pretty quick. Headline, University of Mississippi students riot over Obama reelection. Now, we've been reporting for weeks here at InfoWars that a potential for riots did exist, and as we see in this article, it is a very real and something that actually did happen. Now, to the credit of the naysayers that say people don't riot over elections, this wasn't the biggest riot. It's about 300 to 400 students. It is over by midnight, so enough time for them to get back to bed and to class in the morning. But, I mean, people did go out. There were a few small fires, and, you know, it was a public disturbance, and that ties into this other article I have here. Cops dismiss election night riot claims. Now, this says, now to the credit of this article, I will give it credit. This talks about Obama supporters, and these weren't Obama supporters that went out and rioted. These were Romney supporters, or at least people who were anti-Obama, went out to the streets to riot. So I guess mainstream, you are technically correct saying that we were wrong talking about these riots because they weren't Obama supporters, but Romney supporters or whoever else did go out there and riot. So I would just definitely want to take the time to point that out. Now I'll move on here to another story. This is about a ex-con being elected as a state representative in Detroit. Now, this is something that was interesting to me because people were making a lot of big hubbub about this gentleman, Brian Banks, who was an 8-time felon, but his felonies include pretty much petty stuff, things like writing bad checks, credit card fraud. He went on to win the election by 68%, which I guess, maybe that, I don't know if that says something about the city of Detroit. I'm sure there are many fine people there. But just in case you're wondering, you can't have office in Detroit, or actually maybe I should say the state of Michigan, if you've had a felony in the past 20 years, if that felony is directly related to the office that you're going to be taking. I guess credit card fraud and bad checks isn't exactly related to this guy, Mr. Banks's function. But it makes me think, this is a guy who's been convicted of petty felonies, but but we just re-elected a president who, in my opinion, is guilty of many felonies that are way worse than writing bad checks. We have a president who sends drones and they kill innocent people. And it's an article we don't have it pulled up. Don't worry about pulling up right here, guys. But you can check it for yourself if you're a viewer. It's from Russia Today. And Obama said, if you're a male of military age and you're around when a drone strikes, you're an enemy combatant. So if you just have, hey, if they blow up the building next to you and it falls down on you, well, that's your fault. You're a male of military age. You shouldn't have been there. We have a president that re-signed the Patriot Act. That's wiretapping, Guantanamo Bay still going on, you know, all the things going on, the NDAA, and I mean, just a laundry list. And it's not just Obama. These are things that have been going on for years. Well, the NDAA is something new under Obama, but as far as I'm concerned, we have a president that has done many worse things than Mr. Brian Banks. And we'll go on to our next article here. Puerto Rico votes become a state and referendum in tight elections. Now, this is something that's been voted on a few times over the past few years. Puerto Rico wants to become a state. Well, they've voted to become a state. Now, it still needs congressional approval. And President Obama says if Puerto Ricans want it, he's going to stand by and let it happen. Now, I don't have any opinion either way. So that's just something to be aware of, that Puerto Rico could be the 51st state coming up here pretty soon, David. And I have one last article. This is something I recently picked up. Proposition 36 passes, will modify California three strikes law. Now, I'm pretty sure many of our viewers are familiar with the California three strikes law. This is saying basically if you get three felonies, you're going to prison for life in the state of California. Now, I'm very happy to see that they modified this, and I actually used to work in a county jail. And I see that too many people are going to prison for nonviolent offenses. So I was happy to see that for the California three strikes law, they've included they amended it to include violent offenses. So you have to be convicted of at least one violent felony to go to prison for life, which I mean, not even necessarily all violent offenses deserve prison time, in my opinion, especially not life terms. But I'm glad to see some leeway being made in that area.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen, because of mandatory minimums that were put in with the drug war,
right,
we've seen violent offenders let out. So they can put in people who have a certain amount of marijuana. Based on the amount of marijuana they find, they would get 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, or whatever.
Exactly.
And the judge had absolutely no discretion about it. I mean, it could be their first offense, but they had these mandatory federal minimums, and they were getting the prisons so overcrowded they were turning out violent felons.
That was
part of the what caused these three strike laws. You know, the government will you know, create yet another problem instead of fixing the original problem, you know, which is what was in there. But
that's the point that we had a chance to make yesterday when we talked about these states like Colorado, Washington legalizing marijuana. And I've had a chance. I've talked to many people. Like I said, I used to work at a county jail. And I said, if we treated marijuana, like, I'm not a drug advocate, let me throw that out there first, but if we treated marijuana like we treat alcohol, we would not have half the problems that we have in our jails, in our prisons. Because we can have somebody come off the street stone drunk with a beer in their hand. They lock them up in the city of Tulsa County. You get a 16-hour sit-out for a public intox, but your second, and you can do that multiple times. I'm not exaggerating. There are people who have dozens of public intox offenses. But, I mean, your second time with a little bit of weed, they want to lock you up. You know, they want to send you to the big house. So, I'm not a drug advocate, but I just make that realization that if we treated marijuana like we treated alcohol, we would not have the problems that we have in our judicial system.
Well, we're going to find out about that, because now it's that's essentially what they've done in Colorado and Washington State. They've decriminalized it.
Right.
So we'll see exactly. That's going to be basically treated like it is with alcohol. They're going to tax it. They're going to control it. And
regulate
if, you know, people abuse it and they're doing something in public that's kind of crazy, they'll take care of that too, you know. So
exactly.
I don't think they're going to change. I don't think they're going to make Puerto Rico a state, because, like I told you before, they're going to change all the flags, and everybody loves their flags.
People,
you know,
some people want it, some people don't. So it may not pass. And they've done this before. They've gotten to the point, and it's not gone through. So it will they, won't they? You know, I don't have an opinion either way.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You know, it's something that could possibly happen.
Well, great. Thank you very much, Shikari. That's
Thank
a great
you,
report. We're going to go back to Aaron Dykes, and he's there with Dan Bedondi. And Dan Bedondi's got an update on some information for us. Aaron?
Wrap about 11.
Thanks, David. We're going to go in a different direction. I want to submit that this election, we've heard a lot about the dependent welfare classes, impoverished people who have become wards of the state. But we don't talk enough about the real welfare class, the elite welfare, the real welfare queens, you know, like the Queen herself, her spouse, Prince Philip, their son, Prince Charles, who are sucking off that system like a vampire, who just really make their population subjugate to their will. And well, the point is, we're getting into some occultic stuff because it's in the news about how Prince Charles himself is a literal heir to Dracula. Dan Bedondi, tell us where this is going.
It sounds crazy, it really does, but yeah, it was in the London Telegraph about Prince Charles, heir to Dracula's bloodline. Now, regardless if you believe in vampires, and that's not the point, the article goes on to state at links between the royal family and Vlad the Impala, the 15th century nobleman whose deeds inspired the vampire legend, are being exploited in an attempt to lure tourists to the Eastern European countries. Basically, what they're trying to do is, it's a scam to bring people to the countries, you know, for tourists and everything else. But, the article goes on to say that Prince Charles himself appears in a video being used to promote the country in which he claims distant kinship with Vlad Tepes, the 15th century Wallachian ruler of whom the Irish novelist Bram Stoker bases Dracula on. And, Prince Charles stated that Transylvania is in my blood, he says. He jokes in an interview first shown on the satellite television show last year. The genealogy, he states, shows I am a descendant of Vlad the Impala, so do I have a bit of a stake in this country?
Stake, is that a pun?
Stake in his heart.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And according to the Royal Highness, which is a book published in 1982 by Sir Ian McCreef, the former chairman of Debrett's, the prince is a great-grandson, 16 times removed from Vlad III. I don't even know what the hell 16 times means, but anyway, he can trace his lineage back to his great-grandmother, which was Queen Mary, the consort of George V, to Vlad IV, the half-brother of the notorious ruler.
I mean, to simplify it, they're proud of their lineage to some of the most wicked figures in history, and there's a good reason for it, because these occultic figures, Vlad the Impaler, known as Dracula, they're tied to very important occultic orders, a real power line, both hereditary, but also in the power structure.
And they're known as noblemen. I mean, these guys get praised and everything else, and it's sickening. And the article goes on to state, it has been claimed that porphyria, which is an iron deficiency in the blood, which is thought to be the lie behind the vampire myth, has run in the royal family. And the vampire legend is said to have been inspired by his predilection, for eating bread dipped in his victim's blood. And Dracula means, that's a Romanian term for son of the devil, in which Vlad, and we're going to get to his father in a minute, and you got some information on Vlad's family.
Well, you know more about his occultic ties, I think, than I do, but I've seen a lot of the mainline documentaries. I mean, Vlad the Impaler, known as Dracula, was a real figure. He had a castle. He was over, of course, in Transylvania in the Romanian area, which was the eastern front of the whole European Empire, the various kingdoms below it. And one reason they honored him is because of his brutalness, his willingness towards sadistic tactics, the fact that he would have tens of thousands of people impaled on poles, dead or dying, and just laying out for days, for weeks, for a month at a time. It was such a disgusting sight. He liked to cook people in these ovens and everything. This became actually a weapon of empire, because you had the Muslim forces, the Ottoman Empire, trying to encroach on Europe, trying to take over the Western forces that had power there. And a lot of these Christian-based empires endorsed and readily backed Vlad the Impaler because he was so wicked that he had all these people on stakes. People didn't want to come to that town. They couldn't stand to physically be there because it was disgusting and it stunk and it was wretched. He loved it. But it allowed them in many ways to keep back the Ottoman Empire. Vlad's brother actually became adopted by the Sultan at the time. So the family itself kind of had some split power in its own right. I mean, that's just some of the mainline history I know that fits in with it.
Oh, yeah. And you notice how all these people are rulers, they're kings, queens, some noblemen, whatever. But Vlad's father now, again, he was a member of which is called the Order of Dragons, which is also known, which is the official name, Ordo Draconius. That's the official name for Order of the Dragon. Now, it was created in 1408 by the Holy Roman Emperor Sigismund, which is far from holy, folks. The Order of the Dragon, right, is what's known today as the Illuminati. and masonry. They're a mix of the Illuminati and masonry put together. These people were savages. Now, this is exactly where this all ties in, folks. The son of the devil, which is known as Dracula. Now, Vlad's father was into this order. Very satanic, sick order. What they used to do is they used to drink the blood of a fallen angel in the ritual ceremony. They would raise a fallen angel and drink the blood of this angel. And it would transform on the inside, in other words, indoctrinating, pulling in demonic unclean spirits into the bodies. And they would have, they used a lie that, you know, they had low iron in the blood, which was a lie. But what happened was they had to feast on blood. Now, vampirism, I mean, you don't turn into a bat, you know, the Hollywood fictitious it a lot. But what happens is it transforms you from the inside. And you need, you crave blood. Now this is a high occult. I mean, werewolfism and all that stuff. It ties into the same thing as well. It's very violent and very occultic. Regardless if you believe this or not, folks, this is what the elite do. That's why they stay in the same bloodline, same, you know, family and everything. They intermarry with the normal family because they need to preserve the bloodlines. And speaking of bloodlines, bloodlines of the Illuminati, which is on InfoWarsStore.com. This explains a lot about the bloodlines. Now, the bloodlines go further back, but this gives you a basically up-to-date history, sort of like last couple generations of the bloodlines of the Illuminati. Now, the bloodlines go all the way back to Cain of the, you know, the Garden of Eden, and, you know, from the serpent and all that, and that's another story altogether. But where this all ties into, where this is going here, now the bloodline, now it's not a coincidence that Prince Charles, and we got a picture of that too, Prince Charles with the bloodline, they're related, directly related to George Bush, Obama, Bill Clinton, John Kerry, and the picture right there. I mean, if you do the research yourself, folks, I challenge you. Do the research. You will find that every one of those people and more are all related and happens to be that they're all famous people, noblemen, princes, queens, kings, presidents, prime ministers, the royal bloodline, folks. And look, and there's Vlad right there on the bottom left. It's not a coincidence that all these people are in high positions of power. Because the Illuminati, they need to keep their bloodlines. What they do is they spoil you with riches and fame. And there's always good apples off the bunch, like the JFK family. You know, very corrupt Illuminati bloodline, except for JFK. You know, he was the good apple on the tree. And there's another story altogether.
Well, I mean, Dan, I mean, just to back up for a second, we're talking about supernatural things. Who knows? You know, we could debate if it exists or to what extent. But the point is, these people were into these rituals. They believed it's going on.
Yep.
And it was a vehicle for power, this secret society and others that integrated with them. And the people we know from history who were in power, as a matter of fact, came out of these circles, and they thought they were into it. That's what's so strange about it.
Oh, it is. And people, regardless what you believe, you could be atheist, Mormon, God bless you. Whatever you are, God bless you. But the thing is, and it doesn't matter what we believe, the elite of the world do this, folks. They do blood sacrificial rituals, Eagle Rock in Los Angeles for Hollywood, which is a bohemian grove for the Hollywood stars. I mean, this stuff goes on all over the world, folks. And we had Bill Schnoblin on from Illuminati about the, you know, the Halloween and everything, the rituals that happen. I mean, we're being nice about this. I mean, I could get to sick details, and I'm not going to go there. We don't have much time, but I got to move on. But basically, the whole bloodline, this is why this whole article here is basically telling, you know, people, we're part of the same bloodline, and they brag about it, and they act like Vlad was, I'm proud to be a relative of Vlad. Well, I mean, these people were barbarians. I mean, no other word to describe it. And basically, this moves in right there into the right-wing, left-wing false paradigm. And now, folks, you got to understand, it's not a coincidence, okay, that the right wing represents the red and the left represents the blue. Now, oh, they're just called. No, they're not. They're done specifically, scientifically done that way for a reason. Now, again, in America, when America's first founded, now, yeah, not all the founding fathers were Christians. No, they weren't. Some were into the cult, whatever, but the majority of America was Christians. And religion and politics were like this. Before political meetings, they had prayers and everything. Now, what's the number one thing today? They tell you, don't talk about religion, don't talk about politics, because they don't want you to unite the two. Now, what they did was they separated church and state. they destroyed religion. We're going to not get into that right now. But in politics, George Washington's farewell address said, do not get involved with political parties. Do not, because he knew the corruption of this. Now, what they did was they established a Republican-Democratic Party to split, openly stating, to divide America politically. After they divided America all different ways with the religion and everything. So they divided America politically to corrupt the system. Now, again, it's a right is red, left is blue. Now, anybody that's involved to the cult, I think, low levels don't know this in the occult. But basically, when you get to a path, I mean, it's the same thing with the red and white, the equality, duality thing, but it's red and blue, the same thing. It's like the glasses, the 3D glasses, you got the red and the blue. That's what the world wants you to believe. When you're born, they put these glasses on you, 3D glasses, there's only two colors, two ways to go. Now, picture a giant round table, just a wall. You know, it's a wall, like it's the size of a, you know, shape of a giant round table. When you come to this wall, well, which way do I go? They say, oh, you can go that way, to the right, or you can go that to the left. But the thing is, they both lead to the same place. They don't tell you, well, there's this middle door. They want you to follow these occultic things. Like, anybody seen the movie Pan's Haunted Labyrinth? When I think it's that's what it's called. But when the kids came to the labyrinth, they had two paths to go to. The right was just red, not a coincidence, and the left was blue. Now, again, occultists, Illuminati, banksters founded the Republican Democratic parties in America for the purpose because they wanted to destroy America from inside. They know they can destroy America on the front, so they had to get inside to corrupt it. Now, the whole right-wing, left-wing paradigm is designed specifically to destroy America. They don't want people united, and that's why I tell, if you're, oh, I'm a diehard liberal, I'm a diehard conservative, you know what, you're a diehard idiot, okay? Our founding fathers were not, okay, they were not Republicans or Democrats as we are today. And no, Thomas Jefferson, that was a real liberal, not what a liberal is today. A real conservative was somebody like George Washington, not what a conservative is today. You know, we need to unite, like I tell the Tea Parties all the time, to make a change, we need to unite. Never mind this Republican, Democratic crap. Okay, we need to unite as one. When our founding fathers were libertarian, independent constitutionalists. That's what America needs to be, and that's the only change we're going to come upon. And we need to eliminate the Republican, Democratic parties. But well, I guess we don't have much time. I just wanted to get into a little more.
What you're saying as a practical matter, if you build it, they will come. If you control the mic, if you control the House where the debate is had, you control most of those candidates. You control what's said. You control the way they oppose the other side, the choice people think they're buying into. It's just what Chris Matthews said this week. You only have two choices. Don't go third party. Don't go fourth party. You're wasting your vote. You're an idiot. Buy into that system. Give into that power. That's what they want.
Absolutely. They're not. This really disturbs me. I mean, this. I got friends and family who do this, okay? They say, oh, well, I have to go with the lesser two evils. I have to vote. You know, if you feel the obligation to vote, which is over now, but if you felt the obligation to vote, vote for a third party. Write your own name in somebody else's. You do not support evil. I don't care what you think. I mean, there's some churches out there, some pastors that talk to, oh, you know, well, we have to go with the lesser evil. What does God say about that? You know, you don't support evil, period. Bottom line, it's supporting anybody right now that knows the stuff. If you voted for Obama or Romney, okay, you don't deserve to call yourself an American. I'm telling you right now. Because you have helped destroy this country. Now, I don't blame the elite no more. I blame you, the gullible sheep out there, who fall every 4 years for the same thing. Left and right. Left and right.
That's right.
Wake the hell up. Don't you realize it tips both ways to stop the tipping when you stand in the middle?
And just to bring it back around, Dan, we're talking about how these royal families, how these people in power were related to Dracula, son of Draco the dragon. Well, look at Prince Charles's father, Prince Philip. He said he wanted to come back as a virus so he could wipe out the excess of humans' population. That's the nature. That's the level. That's the height of control freaks that they are. It's just incredible. I appreciate it, Dan. We're going to close the show now. And you've seen, folks, this was our first live beta test. I want to thank David Knight for hosting and our other studio, all the great reporters, Jakari Jackson, Melissa Melton, David Ortiz. You've seen what we can all do working as a team. We've covered so many issues, not just Obama and Romney, but the sub-issues, where we had victories in the states, where we're going from here, what we're going to do to take back our society. We're having the conversation here at InfoWars.com. You can support us in that conversation. financially at PrisonPlanet.tv. You can get a membership. You can share it with your close friends and family. You can take the fight to Planet InfoWars, and you can have your own debates, create your own little mini websites, get the issues out. We must mobilize on the issues you think are most important. That means education. We've got to study the issues, but we've also got to get out there on the streets, take on fights we can win, and we've got to push back against the Caesar effect. When Caesar crossed the Rubicon, that was the official death of, and you see the there from the New York Post, when Caesar crossed the Rubicon, when he became a dictator out of control, that was the death of the Republic of Rome. Our republic in the United States has fallen. We can get it back by following the wisdom of the Constitution. I want to thank everybody who contributed tonight, the crew working in the background, Rob Dew and the others who've helped us, and Alex Jones, who's given us a platform to pursue truth and try to develop ourselves as freedom fighters in our own right. We're going to do this together. And I think everyone watching out there, please spread the word. We can save this country. Thanks. Good night.
Aaron?
President Barack Barry Obama, and you're watching continual coverage of the 2012 presidential election here on InfoWars.com.
Can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.